And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to, it is 2026. It's time to talk. There's schedule releases. There's portal stuff. There's coaching staff changes. And even in, as we start to get down the path of coaching staff changes, we're recording this on Friday, January 30th. And I date us because we're not even going to be the top nine things in this sports market today, considering Derek Falvey stepped down from my beloved Minnesota Twins. And we also had your guy, Kwesi, get fired from the Minnesota Vikings as the general manager. So other than that, how's the play for you, Mr. Luke Buehr?
Yeah, quite the day. There's a lot more in the news, obviously. I think I'll say this. I'm not going to try to get in any way political, Ryan, as you know. But I hope for any of you that this podcast can be a little bit of a distraction from the realities that exist around this world, especially here at home in the Twin Cities. I think that it's important to acknowledge that we aren't all that important here. Gopher football isn't all that important. But we can be a minor distraction. So in a Friday news dump, I just want to acknowledge that a lot has happened since we last recorded. And it's, you know, as you know, Ryan, it's impacted me more significantly than probably most people, and not in a terrible way, but in an inconvenient way. And for those that it impacts in a terrible way, you know, just want to send you our sympathies. And I think the most important thing, as you know, is that we are just a distraction from life. That's it. Nothing more.
Yeah, that we certainly are. So wherever, again, I know there's a smorgasbord of different thoughts and feelings of everything going on here in Minneapolis, but hopefully for the next 60 to 90 minutes, we can help take your mind off it. Because as Luke and I, as two Roseville residents, it's certainly heavy on our minds, considering how close we are to the Twin Cities and inundated in the Twin Cities community here. But yes, hopefully we can get into some tomfoolery, some skullduggery as we continue to talk about some Gopher football related tidbits.
All right. So maybe most important thing, Ryan, is the schedule. The schedule has been released. Mm-hmm. We can flip through kind of game by game. I've gotten some messages that people are excited about the one of the games on the schedule, and we'll get to that soon. And I am also excited for good reason. But let's start. September 3rd, you will have the Gophers taking on Eastern Illinois at Huntington Bank Stadium.
They will. I mean, we knew the non-conference dates where it was the three home games at home. It was Eastern Illinois. Then it is an SEC team in the Mississippi State Bulldogs. For those of you who are getting ready, all I'm going to tell you is listen to some SNL, listen to some Will Ferrell, and get ready for some cowbell. I'm going to assume they're going to pack those in a flight from Starkville, Mississippi, or wherever the nearest related airport is, all the way up here to Minneapolis. So I believe from going back through it with Dan Owen, who does great work for us over here at Gopher Illustrated, I think, now again, we've checked the logs. I'm just saying 99% sure. This is the first time a regular season game in the Twin Cities against an SEC team has happened since, I believe, 1959 when Vanderbilt came to town.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it has been a long, long time since an SEC team has traveled to the Twin Cities. I'll also remind people, yes, I'm very cognizant that Mississippi State hasn't been the greatest of SEC teams here in recent history. No, that is not Fleck dodging the SEC. This is a home-and-home series that was scheduled back in 2016. So essentially,
right before
year
Fleck,
one of the
yeah.
Fleck era. It just happens to be very different kind of trajectories of how they're continuing to build their programs, but it is going to be, at least for the three non-conference games, Luke, that is the one I'm looking forward to. And then I have to figure out next fall, as with, I'm sure, plenty of our listeners, how in the actual, I won't swear on the podcast, but how am I going to get to Starkville, Mississippi? Because I'm pretty sure they're in an airport close by.
Okay, so you said they scheduled it in 2016. Flex first season was 2017. So it very, do you know if he actually was a part of the program?
I don't think so.
This still might predate him. Obviously, yeah. The Gophers have Alabama on the schedule in the not too distant future as it relates to football game or football scheduling. But yeah, so this probably predates him. Okay, and then next they take on Akron. Yeah, the Zips of Akron, one of the greatest names in all of mascots. Often probably known more for their NCAA prowess and, you know, breaking some brackets here and there. But yeah, they'll make their way to Huntington Bank Stadium on September 19th. Okay, probably the one we've all been waiting for. I cannot
Luke Buer.
Yeah, I cannot tell you how lucky we got in the scheduling of this game. For the record.
Yep.
September 26th, out in Seattle, the odds of it raining, they're still there, but it's very more likely that you're going to get a very nice day in Seattle. And it will be, I'll write some stuff up. Maybe I'll even do a guest posting on Gopher Illustrated of how to prepare to go to Seattle and things that you can do and see and eat and all that. But I will say, we absolutely lucked out because school will just be starting. If you don't know, maybe you know this, Ryan, but the University of Washington is on the quarter system. Did you know this?
I didn't know that collegiate school systems still went by that.
Yes, there are still some schools.
I learned something here today.
Yeah, so there are still some schools on the West Coast that follow the quarter system. So they don't start until the end of September in there. It's usually maybe around the 20th or so. My sister went to school out in Seattle. She did not go to the University of Washington, but I did have multiple cousins that went to the University of Washington. And yeah, so this might be one of the first games for them that the students will actually be like on campus and classes will be in session. So to say, you know how we talk about how big, you know, that first home game is, and oftentimes it's featuring all the freshmen who are finally on campus, right? On that Thursday game, like it's their first opportunity to go to hunt or go to the bank as a student. This very well, like students probably still have students have season tickets and whatnot, but this now they're actually students, right? They're actually on campus. Classes have actually started, so that will be one of the unique things for sure. I mean, it's just a beautiful setting. Like I don't know how to describe it any better. Just look at pictures, Google it. Like, honestly,
have you already rented a sailboat so that you can host what I assume is going to be the Gopher Gridiron Radio tailgate sailgate edition out in Seattle? Have you already done that? Cause as I texted you when I got the schedule, I think 8 hours before everybody else. Oh, good for me. I can do things such as do my job. One of the things I did in that spare time was make sure to set my Google flight alerts.
Sure.
Because I'm very cognizant. Again, I'm an independent guy. I don't get any help in terms of with travel from the overlords there at 247 Sports. And I was like, oh, I can fly round trip on Delta if I book it Friday to Sunday for like $320 nonstops.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose. What do you say?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'll say this too. I do know, again, I'm a huge baseball rube, and I do know the Mariners are in town that Friday night. So I'm going to fly in a little earlier in the day. And I know what I'm going to do after the Soda Social is I'm going to check out the Mariners game.
Yeah, there's a great sandwich spot really close to their baseball stadium there. And you know, the football stadium's down over that direction too. But bookmark this, go to Paseo. They're fantastic sandwiches. So that'll be a good one.
Are you coming to this?
Oh yeah, I'll be there.
Do you want to be in the press box?
It's good. No.
Do you want to think about it?
Nope. I want to experience this as a fan.
All right.
And I want to, I have so many connections to this area. Obviously, I have family there. I have a college roommate that lives there. So it's going to be like a reunion. To your question on the sailgate, that topic has come up in the family group chat, and they've actually never done it themselves. So if we do it, and if there's enough interest from the podcast, we'll find a way to all split it together and make it happen. We'll see what my family can pull together, but maybe we'll make a Gopher Gridiron Radio Sailgate happen. We'll see what we can do.
I imagine this is going to be the one that we've seen in previous years, where whether it was the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago, Colorado a few years before that, it's a unique destination that Gopher fans haven't been to. And thanks to the overlords at Delta, mm-hmm. or whether it's Alaska Airlines or however you want to get out there, it's pretty simple to get to Seattle.
Yes.
And I think this is going to be a very well-attended game. For those of you who just want to know quick thoughts on Washington, I'm not Luke Buehr, but I was also following, since we last recorded, the DeMond Williams saga.
Yeah, what a saga.
Yeah, where Lane Kiffin at LSU tried to poach him, tried to buy him out of his $4 million contract, and the Big Ten stood up, and the Big Ten won. Which is interesting because there was also a very similar situation within the ACC with Darian Mensah and Duke in Miami. We're not an ACC podcast. You are more than welcome to use your Google machine to find out the intricacies of that. But it is interesting that this Washington team that has been outstanding at home here in the last five years or so, they're I would say a pretty good, I think they're like a slight tier above what the Gophers were this past year.
Definitely.
But you look at their 26 schedule to open before Minnesota, they play absolutely no one.
Yeah.
I mean, they play the corpse of Washington State, something called the Utah State Aggies of the Mountain West, and then Eastern Washington before the Gophers come to town. So I don't know that the Gophers are going to get the greatest of looks, but it should be a real fun atmosphere. And this is one of the ones I also want to make sure we say this early in this edition. For those of you thinking, all right, everything's set in stone. Sorta is the way I will phrase it. There is still an opportunity for the Big Ten to flex a game or two to a Friday night.
Oh.
And I would, because last year they did it in May. And from my understanding, from talking with the folks in Gopher administration, that is still a possibility. And okay. I think this Washington game could be one of the ones on the docket for Minnesota that could be flexed. I'll talk about another couple as we continue to move forward. But I do want to note that there is a possibility for some of these games to change by 24 hours or so. But largely, you now know the weekends.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's good to know. Yeah. This will be a fun one. I will work to actually get something written up to guide people in and around Seattle if they haven't been, but there are so many Twin Cities connections to the Seattle area that I'm sure people will have connections as well. All right. So let's run through the rest of these. I know we were going to spend a lot of time on that game with Washington. The Gophers will travel back home to take on Michigan at home. This will be the first year coach, Kyle Whittingham, for Michigan. So a new era for Michigan football.
And Minnesota always, just historically here under Fleck, plays ranked teams much better at home than they have on the road, just for clarity's sake. And this is a Michigan team that Minnesota is going to have some pretty good tape on heading into this game, because the week before, Iowa travels to Ann Arbor, and then the week 2 weeks before that, Oklahoma will be up there. Now, the only other thing I want to note about this Michigan team, Luke, this is their only road game before Halloween.
Oh, really?
What's it like to be among the privileged Michigan men that get a schedule in which you have one road game, one before Halloween? How blessed and highly favored are they?
Very blessed. All right, then the Gophers are going to travel to West Lafayette October 10th. They'll take on a Purdue team, kind of an upstart Purdue team, right? I don't know what happened to them in the portal, but I thought they were better than their record. I thought they showed that when they came to Huntington Bank Stadium, but they just couldn't close. Very curious to see what they'll look like in year two.
Well, the other thing about this game is so where this falls in the schedule, this will be the sixth consecutive game for Minnesota and the sixth consecutive game for Purdue. Okay. The interesting note about it, though, is the three previous weeks, Purdue's on the road.
Oh, really?
They're at the Rose Bowl, and then they take on Notre Dame. Oh, excuse me. It's at West Lafayette. Just completely disregard everything I say.
All right.
And they play Illinois in Champaign the week before. But this is one of those sneaky ones where, yeah, I'm well aware Purdue is pretty bad. But it's going to be game six for both teams. You're going to be worn down. And West Lafayette, I'm sure it's going to be an 11 a.m. game. I've seen that tale before.
Yeah. And if I'm right, Ryan, this is just a single bye season again, right? I don't have.
The thing I also noted was it's seemingly for a lot more of these Big Ten teams, the way the schedule broke down this year with just calendar wise, Minnesota only has one bye week. They've had two bye weeks, I think, the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
So this is a one bye week season, which falls directly in the middle, which is incredibly advantageous for them. And why do I say that? Well, we'll get into it here very shortly with some of the other teams that aren't as beneficial, especially for when they are playing Minnesota.
All right. So Minnesota has their bye week the week of October 17th. That would be the Saturday. And then Minnesota will come home. Will come home because they would have been at West Lafayette the previous game. On the 24th, they will play host to the Iowa Hawkeyes, obviously for the Floyd of Rosedale. Iowa has been perennially just like really consistent, no matter what they've done over the last, 10 years. And they'll have to replace a quarterback, in which they've done. But this is a team that really has had the Gophers' numbers during the PJ Fleck era.
And that's where if there's one benefit to the bye, it's you get the bye week to prepare for a home game with Iowa. Now, Iowa also has a bye week to prepare for you, which is why I almost think if you're asking me what could potentially be the most likely game to be flexed to Friday night, I almost think it could be this one.
Sure.
Considering both teams wouldn't be operating then on a short week, it would be on again 13 days rest. And so you'd also get the extra week. Now, the Iowa schedule before they play Minnesota, three previous weeks on the road at Michigan Stadium, they get to host a top 10 Ohio State team, and then 2 weeks before they get to go play Luke's Washington Huskies team in Husky Stadium out there in Seattle. So we're going to learn quite a bit about what Iowa is by the time they play Minnesota, but it also comes down to PJ Fleck 1-8 versus this team. Now you get a bye week, you get them at home. This is one of the ones on the schedule where I already can tell you the Gophers are well aware that they get a bye week, and I've already communicated to them. No excuses.
All right. The Gophers will close out October on Halloween, and they will travel to Bloomington, Indiana. This is a football school, of course, always has been, always will be, and they are the former national champions. And by the way, this is now the third season in a row the Gophers will face the former national champions on the road. So how about them apples?
It's interesting. With that, number one, when this game was obviously put on the schedule, the Big Ten balancing powers that be didn't know that Indiana was going to have a meteoric rise to the national champion. But when you look at where this game falls, if you are going to take on a national champion in their place on Halloween, which is always going to be a very loud atmosphere, considering I can only imagine how many pops and beverages everybody will have in them, dressed as old Greg or Batman or whoever the kids go as these days.
Bob Knight.
I bet you there'll be a few different Bob Knights out there. This will be the ninth consecutive game for Indiana on their schedule. Their bye week comes after the Gopher game. And by the way, Indiana plays in the 2 weeks before they take on Ohio State and Michigan. So they are going to be tested. They are going to be worn down. And if there was going to be a time to take on the reigning national champions, it's after those two games. And it's also when it is the ninth consecutive game on the schedule.
All right. The Gophers open up November with a home game against UCLA. You might remember the late game dramatics in the Rose Bowl against UCLA with Max Brosmer throwing the ball to Darius Taylor. But now this game will be on November 7th in Huntington Bank Stadium. This might be the first time I haven't looked this up, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is the first time that UCLA has played Minnesota in Minnesota.
I'll look it up, but I think the only thing off the top of my head when I just think about this is, you finally got the West Coast teams. And I remember when that everybody was adding them. Everybody's thinking to themselves, okay, well, hopefully when these Midwest teams take them on, they get to take them on in November. Well, Luke, is exactly what you wanted. Now, the last time that these two teams played in Minneapolis, it was 1977.
Wow.
Where the Gophers won 27-13, but if you have to take on a California team, you want to do it in the Midwest in November. So the Fighting Bob Chesneys, first year coach, we'll see what it looks like.
All right. November 14th, the Gophers will travel to Happy Valley to take on Penn State. Should we call them Penn State, or should we call them Iowa State Penn State for this season?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, another first-year coach in Matt Campbell, who has taken essentially every good player off the roster and brought them over to Penn State. Now, the thing about this, I hate traveling to Penn State. I do. It's such a pain to get to, and that's where I picked the brain of our resident former Penn State guy, Randy Johnson, who now does great work for the Star Tribune, Gopher beat writer. I asked him, like, what's your favorite way to do this? And he's, if you can fly into state college, let alone find lodging there, may the Lord bless you and keep you. But it's also got to be keep Harrisburg as an option. Potentially, if you want to go a little further out and drive, it's Pittsburgh, it's Baltimore. There's other options, but it is just awful to get to. Now, in terms of where this falls on the schedule for Penn State, the week prior, they have to travel to Husky Stadium. So it is going to be a three time zone jump to come back to take on Minnesota. I would be hard pressed to believe this would be the whiteout game. If you're asking me which one on their schedule would be, I'm going to guess when USC comes to town, but hopefully Minnesota is not the sacrificial lamb that is a whiteout opponent for Penn State.
All right. November 21st, the Gophers will play host to Northwestern. I can't imagine that you aren't loving the storylines around this game. Your guy, Aiden Chiles, and not to mention Chip Kelly, joined Dayer Braun's staff. Let's go.
I mean, there's a lot of different... Here's the thing. Like, we talked about last year in terms of Big Ten schedule that Wisconsin got the shaft. Like, very, very difficult. Yeah. Northwestern, buddy, they're this year's victim. Not only do they have very difficult opponents on the schedule, their bye week is after week one.
What?
They play South Dakota State, and they play 11 consecutive games. And oh, by the way,
what?
The Gophers are their 10th straight game.
Oh, my gosh.
In the 3 weeks prior, their three opponents... on the road at Oregon, at home against Iowa, and then the week before they travel to Huntington Bank Stadium, they have to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes in Columbus. I know that there's always some shenanigans in the Minnesota Northwestern games, but this is one on senior day for the Gophers that they just have to win. Knowing all that right now, this has to be a win.
Yeah. All right, the Gophers close out the season traveling to Madison, Wisconsin on November 28th in the very traditional last spot. Generally speaking, this game is this game. And I don't know, the Gophers, can they keep the momentum going?
It's going to be the thing we find out, because the schedule is much easier for Wisconsin. Now, they do lead off with Notre Dame at Lambeau Field. And yes, they still have to travel the road games at, say, Happy Valley, road games at Kinnick. But, I mean, their most difficult games after that, to me, are pretty much at home, where you have the Gophers at home. You have it's a schedule to where, I mean, let me just read off the Wisconsin schedule, okay? You have Notre Dame off the rip.
Uh-huh.
The Western Illinois Leathernecks, Eastern Michigan, on the road at Penn State. You get Michigan State at home in year one of your guy, Pat Fitzgerald. They get a bye week to prepare for a West Coast trip for the Fighting Bob Chesneys of the UCLA Bruins. They come back home to take on USC in late October at Camp Randall. Okay, on the road at Iowa. And then their November run is about as advantageous as you're going to find, where it's Rutgers at home, on the road at Maryland, on the road at Purdue, Minnesota. And if there was ever a year to find out if Luke Fickell can coach at all, this should be a pretty decent Wisconsin team record-wise, but we saw that their roster isn't exactly where it needed to be, which is why they spent hella money in the portal, because everything's marked up 20% there and some of their best players still left. So it should be interesting. But the other thing with this schedule, Luke, before we transition into a little bit of portal and coaching staff transition talk, is That's the other thing with this schedule is starting in Seattle, it's road, home, road, home, road, home, road, home, road. Like, you don't get a stretch where you get two straight road games or two straight home games, which is a very interesting anomaly within this whole thing. Because I would imagine they're probably only one of a couple teams that have that. So you don't really get to put your roots down too much with this schedule. Now, it is advantageous that you get the bye week squarely in the middle, but it is a very interesting schedule on paper. Let's say that.
All right. So let's take a quick break. After the break, we will look at some of the staff changes, and then we will also look at some of the portal changes to the roster as best we possibly can. All right, let's get into these changes. You want to start offense, defense, special teams? Where you want to go, Ryan?
I will let you lead, Mr. Shepard.
Okay, let's start at special teams. We have a new coach. There obviously were transfers. There transfers in and transfers out. So why don't you educate us on the new special teams coach?
The amount of tweets that I got when that news broke, by the way, I appreciate many of our listeners that the brand is strong, that I probably got inundated with 20, 25 tweets tagging me to make sure that I saw it, of which I did. But Luke, how do you feel now that the Bob Ligaszewski era was over? What was your favorite moment of his 2-year stretch here in the Twin Cities?
He was the coordinator for the punt return against Michigan that gave me hope. Probably that one.
Like, how that sums up the Bob Ligaszewski era pretty good.
Yeah, thanks.
There wasn't much good. There was too much bad. And Fleck made the decision after the bowl game that he had had enough. And the funniest part is he just went, well, I like the guy across the field who changed the complexion of the entire game with a 100-yard kick return right up the gut, untouched for a touchdown. And the Gophers hired the former New Mexico Lobo special teams coordinator, Daniel DiPrato. Now, DiPrato's been in the D1 coaching ranks for over 20 years. And I'm not going to get into the minutia of it, but I will give you some of the recent track record hits where in his first year, which was this past fall for the New Mexico Lobos, their special teams S&P Plus, which for those of you who don't know what that is, let me just get it a little bit further down. Bill Conley, ESPN, does great work, advanced analytic type. So their special teams improved from 126th to 13th best in college football last fall in the first year of DiPrato. Why? Because DiPrato does two things really well here in the last few years. He gets the team's return units, I'll say, to be among the best in the country. I mean, New Mexico's kick return unit featured a first-team All-Mountain West guy, which I'm sure many of you fans remember here in recent memory. I mean, they had one of the best kick returns, but the other part that gets my heart going pitter-patter, gets a flutter, place kicking. Because Minnesota the last couple of seasons, if we're just going to speak truthfully here, it sucked. Okay? It sucked. Because in 2024, they tied for the most amount of field goal misses in the Big Ten. Last year, they ranked 17th in field goal percentage. Oh, no, by the way, they were 2 of 7 from 40-plus yards, lost a game. This is where DiPrato, he has been able to figure it out kicking-wise. They have had, under his tutelage at New Mexico, or whether it was previously at Texas State, which, Luke, do you even know where Texas State is? I had to look it up.
Well, it's in Texas, I'm going to assume, but I don't. I'll guess Northern Texas.
I'm going to let you figure that one out. I'm going to leave that one teased for a little bit longer, but they have been among the best in terms of place kicking the last 3 years. Now, the thing that gives me consternation, Luke Buehr, and I've told you this offline between since we recorded last, is Brady Denneberg graduated and Minnesota elected to bring in a kicker, transfer kicker. That's great. That's exactly what I would have done. The issue is this young man has 1 year of eligibility left, and he's never kicked a field goal in a game, and that is going to be your main competition for the pride of Alexandria, that is Daniel Jackson. I cannot stress to you, Luke, how I cannot see the forest through the trees on bringing in Beckham Sunderland, who is it's a great story of how he got here. He was a former MLS guy, and then he had concussions, and then he went into kicking, and DePrato actually signed him to be a kicker back in his Texas State days. He was the kickoff guy for Michigan this past fall, but in his career, when the lights have been on, he has attempted one extra point and no field goals. This is the definition, Luke, of something I like to call in the business, I know better, where you don't want to like to go out after the place-kicking issues that Minnesota has had the last couple of seasons. Here's the way I want to phrase it to you so I can allow you to give some input here. I would have paid copious amounts of money to have been in PJ Fleck's office when DePrato sits there and goes, I want to bring in this guy. And Fleck says, okay, tell me about him. Tells him about him. And Fleck goes, well, what's the experience like? Well, he kicked off for Michigan last year, and he's never attempted a field goal, and he's got 1 year left, and he's attempted one extra point. I would have paid significant money to see the expression on PJ Fleck's face, but guess what, Luke? He approved it, and that's what Minnesota is going to go into the season with, is a redshirt freshman in Daniel Jackson, who allegedly wasn't good enough to beat out Brady Denneberg, and Beckham Sunderland, who has two sleeves, which I can appreciate in terms of tattoos. He's got a big leg, but what do you think about Minnesota's decision to say, we don't need experience? What good has that done us?
Yeah, I mean, it's a choice. It's not one that I think that most people would probably make, but you know, I guess we'll give him all the opportunity possible if he can win the job.
No one is forcing them to do this, is the thing I keep coming back to, where no one is forcing you not to take a kicker with any type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I know the flip side of the argument is, well, kicking is all mind games and repetition and it doesn't matter. You just have to get their minds right. And DePrato's got a good history of doing so. I'm not going to spend the next 9 months consternating on special teams because what do I know? I'm just telling you, I don't understand the decision to go into the season next year, which, as we just ran through, seemingly there's going to be some pretty tight, contested games that are going to come down to kicking. And if you don't have a kicker again, what's this going to be? So I just want to say my piece there, Luke, that I don't quite understand why you go into the season with the two kickers that you have, but I don't run the program. I don't make $7 million like PJ Fleck. I don't make $420,000 like Daniel DePrato will here at the University of Minnesota this fall, but let's give it a shot. Hey, what do you say, Luke? Give it a shot?
Well, we are. Okay, maybe just to close out, there's a punter named Zachary Robbins that also committed to Minnesota, and then a handful of guys left that didn't have meaningful impacts, but most everybody has found a place. That would be Caleb McGrath going to North Dakota State. Then you've got Brody Richter, who went to, that's New Mexico State. And then you've got another one that hasn't, Daniel Kemp, that hasn't found a home. So that closes out special teams. Anything else you want to add on maybe Zach Robbins? I know Tom Weston should be back, so yeah, there'll
Tom
be some competition.
Yeah. Tom Weston's back, but they brought in Robbins to essentially be the backup punter because their number two and their number three punters are now at New Mexico State and North Dakota State. Robbins also handed kickoff duties, so we'll see if he competes in fall camp for that type of role. But again, I don't want to spend too much time on special teams here.
All right, let's talk defensive back quick here. I'm going to just summarize who's left. Coy Parrish ended up going to Oregon, as we know. We spent an entire episode talking about that. Zaquan Bryan was maybe a surprise, went to South Florida. He was a starter for the Gophers. Harrison Braun ended up going to South Dakota. Ethan Carrier went to South Dakota. And then Jalen Bowden went to Eastern Carolina. I'm doing this all the for the record, just off of the logos, not even hovering on them.
Well, many people say you are an elite college mind.
Yeah,
I think that is one of the things that many people come up to you while you're at the Aldi here in Roseville and tell you. But this is a defensive backfield that's going to look a little bit different. Now, their coaches stayed. Danny Collins is here. Nick Monroe stayed. The low-hanging fruit here, I should say, is Coy Parrish. Coy Parrish ultimately did get a market. And if you believe, allegedly, what P.J. Fleck said in Naples last week, he got $2 million to go to Oregon, which, if that is true, I cannot stress to you how he is paid as a top three safety in all of college football. And that offer certainly beats the one that Minnesota put on the table. He also gets to go to Oregon, who should be a national contender next year. But I am a little surprised, and I know this has been conveyed to me from some other coaches not on the Minnesota coaching staff, that Oregon did take Coy and allegedly beat out Texas Tech's, I'm sure, outrageous oil money offer to get him. No one is doubting that Coy Parrish is one of the best athletes in college football. It's just, can Coy Parrish as the safety not freelance as much? Can Coy Parrish as the safety not miss the second most amount of tackles among any all Big Ten defenders from a year ago? And if he just has to sit back in Oregon's pass rush and he gets to play center field, he is damn good at doing that. None of us are disagreeing. But I am surprised that Oregon took him, for the record here. You also did see, as you said, Zaquan Bryan head out. It sounds like from that one that between the injury that he battled all year, which was the shoulder injury, and just his conversations with Minnesota's coaching staff, especially as the season went on, he didn't get as much playing time as he thought he was going to. He now gets a fresh start down in South Florida. And then you did also mention that Ethan Carrier and Harrison Brun, some walk-on defensive backs, now get to go play in the Missouri Valley out there in South Dakota.
All right. You want to hit the guys? So I know nothing about these guys that are coming in.
I got you.
No,
you
I can
lead you from there.
I can read that. I mean, I can't pronounce all the names, but maybe that's the game we get to play. We've got Aiden West coming from Michigan State. And then there's also an Elisha West also coming from Michigan State.
Old brother.
And yep. I think that they have to be related, so thank you for that. Parker Knutson is coming from Southwest State, Minnesota. I should note, did you know that I had a relative that used to coach at Southwest State, Minnesota?
Who's your relative?
Well, my relative also kind of coached. It's Gary Buer, but he also coached. He helped out the Jim Wacker era as well here at Minnesota a little bit. Yeah.
7 degrees of Luke Buer coming in full track.
There you go. Yep, my dad's cousin. So he's from the Sartell area, I saw. Then you've got, I think it's Makai Smith. Did I hit that right?
You're doing so good.
Oh man. So that's it. So you got a safety and a few corners.
You do. And I know one of the questions that people want me to hit on is, okay, Minnesota was going to spend low seven figures on Coy Parrish. What did they get to do with his money now? And I would point to one of the areas that they were able to, maybe because their budget expanded, was they were able to go get Aiden West as a true freshman this past fall for Michigan State, played nearly 400 snaps. He played in all 12 games on defense for Joe Rossi as a true freshman corner. And he was pretty good. And the funny part is, as you continue to dive into like the Pro Football Focus grades, I don't pretend to be watching 100% of Jonathan Smith games from last fall, but the thing that continues to come up, at least on PFF, is Minnesota took some guys who played arguably their best game of the year against Minnesota. Aiden West was one of those guys who was highest PFF grade of the entire season, came against the Gophers. The Gophers did offer him out of high school. It was right before National Signing Day back when. Ends up signing with Michigan State, plays immediately, hits the portal with a coaching change, and then he's able to come here to Minnesota. And now his older brother, Elijah West, is going to be coming. He's more of, I would say, more of a depth piece, somebody that could potentially help you at nickel, hopefully on special teams. But Aiden West, is going to be somebody with John Nestor kind of solidifying himself as a bona fide, easy, put him in pen, CB1 for Minnesota. With Zaquan Bryan leaving and Jayonte McMillan graduating, Aiden West immediately joins the group of, I would say, Aiden Goosby, Mike Gerald, again, whoever else you want to put in there. I would say those are my top three for the CB2 job. But you're able to go out and get a starting caliber corner who played a lot of snaps for Michigan State immediately. Now, they also did go get the kid from Sartell, the Division II All-American himself, Parker Knutson, played some nickel, played some safety down there. They were able to beat out Iowa for him, which I was able to get some details behind the scenes there. From my understanding, Iowa had an offer money-wise that was at least two, if not three times bigger than what the Gophers was. And Knutson wanted to be a Gopher. So he saw the immediate playing time available. He likes to wants to be a Golden Gopher, which I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast are like, what a novel theory in 2026. But if you're looking for a guy to root for, I think Knutson is going to help them potentially at nickel, potentially at safety. And then, as you mentioned too, Mekhi Smith, the pride of Lehigh, which, speaking of bracket busters, that's probably the only reason I know where Lehigh is, right? Or else why does anybody know where Lehigh is?
That's probably it, yeah.
He was one of the top graded safeties as a true sophomore this past fall out there in the FCS. So he is a bigger type of body, 6'2"-ish. I think he's going to be a guy that competes with the smorgasbord of names on the back end. He also could potentially be that big nickel Jack Henderson type. So I think Minnesota feels pretty good about what they were able to do, knowing that Coy Parrish wanted to seek greener pastures, literally, monetarily, jersey-wise, however you want to phrase it, Luke.
Quack.
Do you like that?
Quack.
Keep it moving. Let's go.
All right. Linebacker, Mariano Sorry-Marin should return as the linebacker coach. They saw one departure in Drew Wilson. He ended up going to, I think, Lafayette is this logo?
Correct.
Oh, nailed it. And then Andrew Marshall is coming in to Minnesota. He is coming in from Eastern Michigan. So
yeah, he started six games or so for them. Nice. I don't want to spend too much time here, and I don't mean to demean Andrew Marshall, but this was one of the lowest monetary spends on the entire portal class because the Gophers were looking for a 10th linebacker, and that was about it. So what does that tell you? That they hope Marshall can come in, have a Derek LeCaptain type of presence where he's an older guy, can hopefully help you on all four special teams. But it also should signal to you that with the departure of Dev Williams, who graduates, that they, in theory, feel pretty good about the guys that are going to be competing alongside Baranowski, where you're going to have guys such as Emmanuel Carmo, Matt Kingsbury, Joey Gerlach, Mason Carrier, yeah?
Yeah.
Stendhal Cleveland. I mean, they feel good enough to where they really thought internally, we don't need to go out and potentially get a starting caliber guy. We want to get a depth piece, and that's where they were able to get an Andrew Marshall.
All right, here's where we're going to talk a lot, I imagine. Defensive line. there's a coaching change here. I don't know if we've talked about this coaching change yet. So let's talk about the coaching change, and then we'll get into the transfer situation.
Yeah, Minnesota fired Dennis Dotton Carter before the bowl game, which was interesting, considering they let some other coaches go after the bowl game. And we talked about Bob Legaszewski. We'll get into the Matt Simon decision here, I'm sure, in a few minutes. But why before the bowl game? Well, I don't pretend to want to spill the hot tea or the hot goss. I don't know what the kids call it. I'm too old. I'm old and crotchety. I'm shaking my fist at clouds nowadays. But it sounds like if you wanted to be able to potentially retain some very key players who are coming back, plus get guys to play in the bowl game, I think by that time that there were some people in the room that were not
interesting.
The biggest fans of Dennis Dotton Carter. Now, that's not to say he's a moral failing of any kind.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that at all. But it was just time for a change in leadership. So what Minnesota elected to do with their budgetary restraints is they elevated C.J. Robbins, who had been working with the rush ends this fall. So what position is that, Ryan? Think of Carter Menz. Think of Jackson Howard. So he's going to go from working with the pass rushers to now working with the defensive tackles and Anthony Smith. Now, to fill his spot, and we'll see if it holds, and I say we will see if it holds, they hired Bobby April III. Who is Bobby April III? He was Stanford's defensive coordinator the last three seasons. But why I mention we'll see what happens here is the years before that, he was with Jim Leonard at Wisconsin for 5 years. He was the number two in command for Jim Leonard, and he's got some NFL experience. Well, Jimmy Leonard is a hot commodity amongst yes. NFL defensive coordinator searches right now, and it sounds like he is going to get a defensive coordinator job in the NFL. And I'm going to be very curious to see if he then elects to bring in his second in command to his NFL staff, considering that April doesn't exactly have a prominent role on the Gopher staff. But you do have some experience in Bobby April, who is, as I said, he was at Wisconsin coaching outside linebackers, pass rushers, and their 3-4 defense. And then most recently here at Stanford as the defensive coordinator. So it is interesting the way that they went to approach that, Luke. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, I definitely think that's interesting. Okay, in terms of departures from the defensive line, you've got Stephen Curtis, who ended up going to, I believe this is North Texas, and this is why you brought this up, isn't it? I just connected those dots. North Texas is near San Antonio, Ryan.
I'm very proud of you. Keep going.
All right. And then now as we get into guys that are coming to Minnesota, I've noticed a little bit of a trend. One, Marshall, where you have Sid Kaba and Naquan Crowder coming in. Yep. All right. That's trend number one. Trend number two, TJ Bush coming from Cal, where he killed the Gophers. Okay. That's storyline.
Another guy who had one of his best games of the entire yes. season against your Golden Gophers.
Yes, exactly. Yep. That's the trend I'm talking about. Now, the third trend is what I'm going to call the Richard Pitino trend, right? Yep. Do you know why?
Lay it on me, baby.
Richard Pitino coached 1 year at Florida International University, where Zion Chapman is from.
You and your basketball team. Golly.
So that is the class coming in for the Gophers. I don't think I missed anyone. Chapman, man, 4-star, .92. Let's go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is a defensive tackle room specifically that is just going to be completely overhauled. You've got a brand new coach. Jalen Logan Redding is gone. Nate Becker is gone. Rushon Lawrence is gone. Devin Eastern is currently at the Senior Bowl. And you lose your top four guys who played defensive tackle snaps. And they have to figure out a way to replace that. So what they've done is they attacked it pretty hard, I would say, in the portal, monetary-wise. From my conversations both with, I would say, the Gopher staff, and just other college football staffs across the Missouri Valley, across the Mountain West, other just types of portal sleuthing is the way I'll phrase it.
Okay.
So the most expensive thing that caught some people by surprise was defensive tackle. You may think to yourself, Luke,
yeah,
okay, that in the NFL, defensive tackles is are very, very highly compensated. They're very sought after, and you'd be right. So you're thinking to yourself, these college general managers didn't know that? Well, shame on them. No, they knew that, but the issue is the supply versus demand that ended up happening
yeah.
for quality defensive linemen. I mean, I was talking to somebody, and they were like, this guy is worth $800,000. And I'm looking, he played like 200 snaps in the Conference USA and not at a high level. And I went, in what world? In this economy? Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, that is what we have found, is that there were not enough quality defensive line. And if you were, you had to pay up. And so Minnesota paid up to get some guys. Now, if we're going to start with probably my favorite addition in terms of immediate impact type, that is going to be the Cal kid, TJ Bush,
mm-hmm.
who he has played a ton of football, where he spent his first 2 years at Liberty, where he was a freshman All-American, played immediately as a true freshman, took it up a notch as a sophomore for Liberty, had almost 10 tackles for loss. He was All-Conference USA second team, hits the portal, goes to Cal Berkeley. What does he do at Cal Berkeley this last fall? leads them in pressures, hurries, sacks, and has 11.5 tackles for loss. None of the theoretical, I mean, it's theoretical and pressures and hurries, but it's also numbers and tackles for loss and sacks. And to me, this is another one of those commodities that you can point to and say, if you had Coy Parrish, you couldn't afford to potentially splurge a little bit on a TJ Bush because you do have Carter Mens coming back.
Yes.
But I think the thing this signals to me is Jackson Howard is officially on notice because TJ Bush is going to play 500 snaps for the Golden Gophers this fall. Now, the hope would be that he can mix in with Carter Mens at rush end, hopefully at 265 pounds. He can play some five technique to spot Anthony Smith because I would really enjoy if Anthony Smith doesn't play 671 snaps, which that was 200 more than the next closest Gopher defensive lineman. He played way too much. He wore down as the season went on. But it's Jackson Howard to me that is going to be fighting for his playing time life now. Because he was one of the least productive defensive ends in the Big Ten on the snaps he got. And I think Minnesota saw that and they went, okay, well, this guy wants to potentially come here. We're in his price range. Let's see if it works. And then it did work. Now, the thing to me, Luke, is what is Jackson Howard?
Dude, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to push back slightly. Like, this is good. I mean, sure, Jackson Howard's on notice, but like, this is football, man. You need to have depth. Think about if the Gophers would have had injuries last year on the defensive line.
We spent an entire fall. I'm well aware. I get the point
like,
you make.
Sure, you can say Jackson Howard's on notice. Like, I think this is just good. This is probably just good roster construction and roster management. And frankly speaking, like, I don't know if Jackson Howard took like a hometown discount or whatever. I don't particularly care to get into the money piece of that. But like, I would rather have four guys that can play defensive end than, you know, two for sure. And
well, again, to be clear here, I'm not saying Jackson Howard shouldn't be off the roster. I'm more
right.
Jackson Howard shouldn't be on the field for pass rush situations. I think TJ Bush should be. I think Jackson Howard was probably the best rush end they had against the run. And I'm still cognizant that Jackson Howard just finished his third year of college football. And now he's got hopefully his best two seasons ahead of him because he'll be 21, 22, 23.
That's
I'm not giving up on Jackson
Howard. Okay, good. I just want to make sure that was clear.
I'm just saying, if Jackson Howard wants to play, like Jackson Howard has to beat out TJ Bush. He's got to beat out Carter Mens, or he's got to beat out, say, Adam Kasai or whoever's going to be the backup five.
Yeah.
Like, I want, and I understand the point you're making with this, which is one that I'm also excited about in theory. Now, everybody's paper tigers until we start to get through spring ball
100%.
And I start getting feedback from the staff and my own two eyes and see how it all matches up. But I want all the competition I could possibly have.
Exactly. That was me the point I was going to make. Like, it's the competition piece that matters the most. So, yeah.
So now we slide into the interior where Minnesota brought in three portal defensive tackles. You mentioned it, the Richard Pitino home, Zion Chapman, who the Gophers beat out Arkansas. They beat out, I believe, also Penn State is another place where he took a visit. Now, the thing I will say about Chapman is if he was healthy, I mean, he's your pass rusher, defensive tackle. He was a very, very good pass rusher. The issue is, as I'm sure some people saw on social media, if you follow him on Instagram, or if you don't follow teenagers and early 20 guys on Instagram. Like I also get that in my life. It's a very odd commodity, but it appears he had shoulder surgery, which means he is going. I asked a couple members of the Gopher football staff, and they went, yep, that's going to be it. So we've seen this somewhat previously with Khalid Tafai. Now, the Khalid Tafai thing, we'll get into him a little bit later, but he was healthy physically come August 1st for fall camp. And he had the same type of shoulder surgery. If there was ever a lineman who could talk you through labrum surgeries or shoulder surgeries, it might be the guy you're listening to right now who has had arthroscopic on posterior, anterior, on both shoulders. He should be fine. Good to go for hopefully summer workouts and then physical contact by August. And he's played football. He's an older guy. But Just want it known that I don't expect to see Zion Chapman going through spring ball.
I also don't think, just to close the chapter on Khalil Tafai, like, not a huge surprise from a guy that watches and follows Washington Husky football that didn't work out. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that. Not a huge surprise.
We'll get into it a little bit later. I like the tea. I like spread it around a little bit. But so Chapman is the highest rated guy in this class. I just don't think the 247 overlords had the context of, okay, now he's going to be out for the spring with shoulder. If healthy, he can play either defensive tackle spot, and he is a very lightning quick pass rusher type, even at 300 pounds. Now, Naquan Crowder is a 320-pound Pat Williams type of body. One that with Devin Eastern graduating and Nate Becker and whoever else you were thinking about playing one technique, which is the guy who is sandwiched in Minnesota's defense between the center and the guard, they eat a lot of double teams. And they're there to kind of hold the line, make sure that there's no vertical push to the linebackers directly behind them. Of immediate impact types, I mean, I think Crowder, I can immediately put in pretty solid number two pencil lead for 400 snaps at one tech. Now, the question is Riley Sunroom playing alongside of him or getting the other 400 snaps? Is it going to be Theo Randall, who missed the entire fall with a foot injury? The other one that I get questions about, and I asked about it this past week, is, do you remember a portal ad from a year ago at this time? A young man from Purdue who missed the entire Gopher season with back issues.
Yes.
He's still on the roster.
Really?
And so the lovely folks at Gopher Illustrated go, what's up with that? And so I listen to my members. You pay my mortgage. And I ask around, and he's going to try and attempt to play. Now, for any of you that have had back issues, you know how quickly things can flare. He's already had back surgery in the last 12 months. I'm not incredibly optimistic, but it's a low risk, high upside type of deal where if he's actually healthy, he's a pretty good player. Now, the question is, does he even make it to summer workouts before potentially medically retiring? We'll find out. But in talking about the one technique and who is competing with Naquan Crowder, you're looking at the Theo Randall, the Riley Sunrooms, and the more so, I would say, like I said, the Purdue defensive tackle kid. Now, the last one, Sid Caba from Marshall, started his career at Western Michigan, finally got his feet wet this past fall. For Marshall, I think there's upside there, especially as a pass rushing type. He's 290 pounds-ish. He can play three technique, one technique. But with all these guys, I just... outside of TJ Bush, and it's, I kind of hesitate after last year where we thought Stephen Curtis was going to give him something. They lit money on fire. He's on now at North Texas. Let's see how it all looks through spring ball. And then I can start the hype machine on a couple of these guys when I start to actually see it with my own two eyes. And I'm actually able to talk with people on the Gopher staff about what they're seeing in practice every day. But they have spent a considerable amount of money on their defensive line. Now, it helps when you have core pieces like Anthony Smith, like Carter Mentz coming back, but you're also going to need guys like Theo Randall, Jackson Howard, guys like Jalen Hicks. You can go down the list here to take the next step, and that's one of the things that I really hope is the catalyst for competition in that room for between now and Eastern Illinois.
All right, let's move to the offensive side of the ball. We'll talk about tight end. I don't actually even know if the tight end coach changed. I don't think so.
Eric Kaler is still here.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, Eric Kaler is no longer the president of the University of Minnesota, Ryan. How dare you?
Yeah, no kidding.
No kidding. I'm well aware of Rebecca Cunningham. I've uttered her name way too many times here in the last 2 weeks. But Eric Kaler, spelled completely different, is still the tight end coach.
All right. And then they brought in a Caden Helms with no departures. He comes from Oklahoma. I take it this is probably a depth play and maybe to replace that kind of blocking tight end. Just a guess.
Well, again, you look at the tight end position. You lose Jamison Gears, you lose Drew Bibber, and you lose Frank Bierman. So you're starting Y, your backup Y, and your H-back fullback type. Now, this signals to me, and from talking with some people over there, that Minnesota really wants to see what they have. in Pierce Walsh, Jacob Simpson, Julian Johnson. And that's what I had been kind of saying throughout the portal season here is don't expect Minnesota to splurge for a starting caliber tight end. Now, if Caden Helms is healthy, he can give you Drew Bibber type of reps. The question is by the time Eastern Illinois comes around, is Caden Helms going to be healthy? Because that sums up his career down for the Oklahoma Sooners is when healthy, he played, but he wasn't healthy enough. So he's healthy now. And the hope would be he stays that way, but he's being brought in to push that core of Pierce Walsh, Jacob Simpson, Julian Johnson, and then Roman Voss when he gets on campus here in June is also expected to enter the mix. We'll see if they can get anything from Sam Peters, but they're going to start to break in some of these tight ends who are now in their third and fourth years. So we'll see how that continues to go.
All right, let's talk offensive line. I've been waiting the entire episode to talk about this. It is the return of Matt Limegrover, not as the offensive line coach, but he is returning. What is maybe the most famous saying that Matt Limegrover has that you remember from his time with Jerry Kill? Because I have a saying that sticks with me and some of my buddies still say to each other. So I'm curious to see if you can get this.
Bestow your knowledge in the group chat upon us.
All right. His famous saying is, I love you and I hate Wisconsin.
Oh, Matt Limegrover. Yeah, it's been an interesting time here with the offensive line because Brian Callahan does return. But Minnesota saw a change behind the scenes there beside him. Do you have any other things before you want me to get into it?
No, I just want to say, like, honestly, this kind of makes sense to me why you bring him in. I understand that he's not the offensive line coach. But if you could think of someone in your recent past, Ryan, not your personally, but Gopher football's recent past, that can coach up some gap schemes, like, who's that going to be?
I think going to Matt Limegrover to bounce ideas off is an astute thing from Brian Callahan, who, to be clear here, is still the voice in the overarching thing in the room. Like, there's a misconception here that Matt Limegrover is going to have all this power when he comes in. Folks.
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that, like, imagine you can talk to somebody that has coached gap schemes their entire career. Because we saw last year, like, they had a lot of success, a lot more success running power, right? Like,
well,
I don't know.
It's because they had zero success running any of their zone schemes. Yeah. People don't get started about all that.
But, like, and I just don't know if Callahan's coached gap schemes particularly a ton. So getting someone to be able to bounce those ideas off of, like, invaluable, man.
In theory, it makes sense. So Brian Callahan returns. His underling was James Bain, who is now the offensive line coach out of South Dakota. So he gets to go be a full-timer in the Missouri Valley. And then you've also got Minnesota elected to not renew the contract of Bill Legg, who is another significant voice in that offensive line room alongside Bain. So Limegrover is going to essentially fill the Bill Legg role, which is he gets to sit in the office in Brian Callahan's office. He gets to be a practice every day, but it's going to be on Callahan offensive line wise. And then if Greg Harbaugh wants to use Matt Limegrover, just make sure he doesn't pull up, what was it, 2014 Michigan with three shifts in a motion. Everybody in the stadium,
but
including us Jamokes in the press box, are screaming the clock is running, yet no one told Matt Limegrover.
Yeah, but okay, you can say that, but he also brought you whatever it was, like 56-14 jet sweep to no end KJ May against Iowa at home.
Well, you're going to see jet sweeps in here with Braden Stevens or Quade Hendricks.
Yeah, but I'm just, that's just my point. Like, there's definitely some downs with Limegrover, but there's also some ups, and you hope that you can blend it to mostly get the ups.
So they've got some different names in that room. They also elevated one of their volunteers. I think it's Cody Schultzman. I hope I'm getting that right, to the new James Bain role. But you look at the offensive line. You lose your right tackle in Dylan Ray. You lose your right guard in Marcellus Marshall. And you return Ashton Beers. You return Greg Johnson. You return Nathan Roy. Great. especially with Roy and with Greg Johnson, they paid to keep them, which, look, I think they both have NFL futures. I'm all for it. And I also think now in hindsight, I've learned, and I think it's important to share with the audience here, that I am now viewing Ashton Beers' season differently than when we were evaluating it in real time. Why do I say that? I've since learned that Ashton Beers has had surgery on his elbow since the bowl game, and he was battling that injury that was so serious that he had to get surgery. And oh, by the way, he also suffered a high ankle against Cal and then played through it. Now, the counter argument is, why didn't they just throw in Brett Carroll? Why did Brian Callahan do many of the things that he did in terms of giving Marcellus Marshall 600 snaps or sticking with Dylan Ray and not going to Tony Nelson until the final two games of the season? I'm ready to forget about the 2025 offensive line altogether for a long time now, but I do just want to say that is one of the things with when you're evaluating what Ashton Beers' season now looks like in hindsight, knowing that he battled multiple significant injuries. I'm hopeful that now when healthy, hopefully by the start of summer workouts, he should be pretty good to go and hopefully take that next step. Now, the interesting part about offensive line portal stuff is they only brought in one guy. And that was, I would say, one of their biggest swings monetary-wise in bringing in Bennett Warren from Chip Scoggins' Tennessee Volunteers crew. Now, do you know anything about Bennett Warren?
I know that he is 6'7", 325 pounds. He went to Tennessee most recently. If you look at the grading by 247, they look at he and Khalil Tafai as equals. That's what I know.
That's one way to put it. That is very interesting by my 247 people who didn't ask for any opinions about why is this guy leaving? Was this guy any good? But well, who am I but a schmuck? So here's what I'll tell you about Bennett Warren. I expect him to compete immediately at right tackle for Minnesota. He's listed at 325, but my intel from what he showed up at on his visit was closer to 295 pounds. So there's a big difference of 30 pounds there, even for someone like myself. But he is a former top 100 overall prospect just 2 years ago. He played some for Tennessee, and I will remind you, Tennessee, he played some for them as a true freshman when they made the college football playoff. And then this past fall, too, he played in all 13 games. I'm not here to tell you he's a savior, but I'm here to tell you Minnesota's swinging on athletic upside. And I understand that for some of you, you get flashbacks to Malachi Coleman, or you get flashbacks to Khalil Tafai, or Dalen Wright. I mean, pick your XYZ guy here. This is the swing for them. Was they like what they have in Roy, Greg Johnson, Ashton Beers. There's going to be a multitude of guys competing at right guard. Tony Nelson, Tracy Minnesota's own. You'll have, I think, Brett Carroll will compete there. You've also got Jaden Ball, a Purdue transfer from a year ago that Minnesota really likes. And then at right tackle, it's going to be between Bennett Warren and then DJ Shipp, a redshirt freshman that Minnesota likes quite a bit. There is a pretty good drum beat for him helping sooner than later at right tackle. So when Minnesota went through this, I think if you were to have given them truth serum early on, I think they would have told you we're going to take two. But with the way that the market worked out, especially with the help that Fleck elected to give the defensive side of the ball monetarily, you were only going to take one guy. And that's where they elected to swing at right tackle with Bennett Warren, the Tennessee guy.
All right. We'll get off of offensive line and let's get to wide receiver. A lot of names. Obviously, Matt Simon has moved on. And the pride of where? Oh, man, I just blanked on his name. Is it Caledonia?
Thank you. I was about to say famous father.
Yeah, geez.
Golly.
Took a second there. It's been a day, though, and you know that. I got a kid in the concussion protocol. So, when your four-year-old's in the concussion protocol, it's quite a big day. But, yeah. Okay. Let's talk the coaching change first, and then we'll get into the lot of moving parts in this wide receiver room.
Yeah, it is a lot. After 11 straight years, I think it was, PJ Fleck elected to move on from Matt Simon, which after the last couple of seasons, I get it. Again, I think this podcast specifically between myself, Luke, and Derek Burns had told you the receiver play had not been up to snuff. I think a lot of things with Matt Simon and how you should evaluate his tenure here can be true. Is he coached some of the greatest receivers statistically in history with Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, Chris Ottman Bell, Daniel Jackson. That is true. But I also think, especially here recently, it wasn't up to par, especially here in the most recent season. And that's where I think the writing started to get on the wall too. When you look at the first few days after the season, five receivers immediately said, nope, I'm out. Like, I'm out. And you also had Lamecki Brockington, of all people, opt out of playing in the bowl game. I think that some actions reflect some words of kind of how things were communicated in there. And I just think a fresh voice was needed for that room. So it's interesting too, from what I've kind of gleaned here behind the agent scenes, that I don't know what Matt Simon's going to do. I don't think he's in a rush to make any type of decisions. I don't know if he's going to go to the NFL. I can tell you he's turned down MAC coordinating opportunities. That's an interesting, I think maybe he just wants to take a fall off and figure it all out. But in his stead comes the pride of Caledonia.
Hold on. You're not going to ask me my favorite moment of the Matt Simon era.
Go for it.
It is very clearly the game he called against Auburn.
The Kirk Soraka game plan that he executed at a very, very, very high level that he should not have to apologize for, to be clear.
That was amazing.
But I do think, like, even with that, like, if you're Simon, you're like, okay, I call that great game, but Sanford had already been essentially hired behind the scenes. And then Soraka leaves again, and then they go to Harbaugh over you. I think the writing on the wall was pretty clear.
Yeah.
That he just didn't see him as an offensive coordinator type.
Yeah.
And if that's what Simon wants to do, he's going to have to go prove himself at a lower level. So in his stead comes in Isaac Frichte, Carl's son, longtime Caledonia football. Then I don't know that I've ever seen an RCTC. I think he's probably the last player from RCTC to be on the roster, right?
Interesting. I have no idea.
Because he had to get here the hard way. And then he goes into coaching and he had to work his way up through the ranks. Most recently, he was at North Dakota the last couple of seasons as the offensive coordinator. He was an AFCA, I think it's 35 under 35, not or honoree here in the most after this most recent season. And he's now your new receivers coach, making $400,000 less because he's happy to be here, which, again, not for this podcast, but we'll get into the budget with Eric Vigo and you someday again. But it's an interesting room now that Lamecki Brockington is gone. I mean, did you run through the other receivers that left?
And no, I'll hit the receivers that left. Quentin Redding, I don't think has a home. Legend Lions is out to, that would be Montana. Christian Driver doesn't seem to have a home. And then you've got Kendrick Lanier ended up in Missouri. Malachi Coleman ended up in Wisconsin. You've got a few guys that came in. I'll let you take the guys that came in because I really don't know a lot about them other than Perry Thomas. I was familiar with that name.
Perry Thompson.
I was actually looking at
it. It wouldn't be a GGR episode if you miss enough to get something.
Yeah, yeah. Perry Thompson. And I was looking at Noah Jennings, and I was trying to see if I recognize that name, but I don't think I do.
Okay. Yeah. Malachi Coleman gets to go with Aaron Witt to complete the how many fan bases can I piss off with Aaron Witt, formerly committed to Minnesota, formerly committed to Iowa, now still at Wisconsin. I think he's on a sixth or a seventh year. And then Malachi Coleman in the other rival circle of Nebraska to Minnesota to Wisconsin. Very interesting arc for him. So we'll see how it works out for him in Madison. The Christian Driver thing, I don't know that he plays football again at this point. I have heard that some schools reached out to him. Now, again, they weren't at the Power 4 level, but that he just did not get back to them. So I don't know what that means. Again, he did take a visit to Syracuse, but he ultimately didn't end up going there. So we'll see what's in his future. We'll see what's in Q Redding's future. But yeah, at receiver, I think the thing I learned from this group is I thought Minnesota would allocate more money here, but it just didn't work out that way. Now they spent some type of money with guys like Perry Thompson and guys like Noah Jennings. Thompson is your upside swing of he played at Auburn the last couple of seasons. I don't pretend to have watched a ton of Auburn football, to be quite honest with you here, but he's a former top 50 overall prospect, 6'3", 220 pounds. The question is, unlike the last former 4-5-star type of receivers who are that size, is his head going to be screwed on straight?
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope to tell you he's going to be the 50-50 ball winner for this Javon Tracy, Jalen Smith receiver room, but we'll find out. I think the guy I'm probably more high on than many people is Noah Jennings, who comes to Minnesota from Cincinnati, where he has like a Elijah Spencer type of background, where he played at a lower level, was productive at the lower level, and he played at Charleston Southern, and then he went to Cincinnati, played quite a bit for them. Again, I'm not expecting him to come in and catch 40, 50 balls, but why can't he come in here and catch 25 or 30? I still think Javon Tracy and Jalen Smith are your alphas in this room, and then it's going to be the next tier below them of the Noah Jennings and the Perry Thompsons. They also added Zion Steptoe, which, Luke, I told my wife that name when I was writing a story about him, and she goes, is he from a Key and Peele sketch? Mm-hmm. And again, I don't mean to throw any shade at the young man. I'm just telling you, very interesting college football name. The thing to note about Steptoe, comes to the Gophers from Tulsa, where he played quite a bit. Mm-hmm. He led the entire conference this past fall in ADOT.
Oh.
So for those of you who want me to put it a different way, he led the entire conference in how, like, per target on how far down the field he was targeted. AKA, they only chucked the ball to him deep. Like, he had like an ADOT that was ridiculous, like 20 yards or something. So if you're looking for a vertical threat hope, there's your Zion Steptoe. But when I look at this receiver room, you've got a change in leadership from Simon to Frichty. You lose Lamecki Brockington, Logan Loya, Malachi Coleman, yada, 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 Kenrick Lanier. You do return Jalen Smith and Javon Tracy, but it's also going to be, can Bradley Martino give you something? Can Nuke Hayes give you anything in year four now? Can you get something from these transfer receivers? Can the true freshmen give you anything when they get on campus? It is going to be, I think, receiver 3 through 5, very different. But the expectations for Jalen Smith and the expectations for Javon Tracy are very different now for them in this new look receiver room.
All right, let's talk running back. This is a room that's not going to be led by Mo Ibrahim. Wow. Like, world comes back full circle. Like, okay.
Which, speaking of villain arcs, what was your favorite Jaden Everett moment of leaving the Gophers to take a 6-figure pay raise plus a second year on a position coach deal to go to the Wisconsin Badgers?
Hey, man, good for him. He got that second year. That's guaranteed money.
So if Luke Fickell gets fired after this year, he doesn't care because he's going to be laughing all the way to the bank.
Yep.
Which sounds like that was a big part of why he wanted to take that. So in his stead, Mo Ibrahim is back in our lives. What an arc for this podcast, Stephen.
No kidding. I hope you start questioning his abilities to coach, because then I think he'll do quite well. Not that you questioned his abilities to run.
Somebody
but
in their head right there had a couple of rim shots that they added in there.
Oh, yeah.
I would appreciate if they did.
Yeah. Okay. Those that exited, Femi Ijeboy goes to Purdue. And then you've got, oh man, I've never seen this name before. Johan
Cardenas.
Cardenas, okay.
Yep.
And then Trey Berry. Trey Berry ended up, I don't actually recognize this logo.
Tennessee State, baby.
Okay, Tennessee State. So you got a couple guys coming in. I'll let you take those. I mean, it looks like the two coming in, at least graded-wise by 247, grade out about the same as Femme. I'd be very curious to see if you agree with that.
Oh, boy. I mean, we'll find out because Darius Taylor returns. You see other guys leave. A.J. Turner is going to be coming back off a knee. They also took T.J. Thomas from Elon. Minnesota's had some success with Elon transfers in recent years. The thing to note with T.J. Thomas, he is not going to be, I don't think, healthy for the spring because he's battling. He's coming off, I think it's a shoulder surgery.
Sure.
He's not a gigantic guy anyway.
5'8".
Yeah, 5'8", 190. But when we talk about losing Coy Parrish and Q Redding, you need somebody to return kicks.
Okay.
And I think T.J. Thomas is somebody who has extensive experience doing so. I think he's going to be one of the more prominent return men you see during spring, summer, and fall camp. But he is also expected to compete with A.J. Turner. And you've also going to have some other guys like Grant Washington. I mean, Xavier Ford got a lot of love from Darius Taylor and other Gopher coaches to me down in Phoenix when I asked about who's next. And then you've also got the Ryan Estrada and the Zeke Bates types that are also going to be coming in here. But the thing to know is, yes, Darius Taylor is back. Yes, it is an even year, which means Darius Taylor is going to stay healthy for every game because the angry running back god isn't here anymore. But it's also T.J. Thomas gets to come in and compete with A.J. Turner, Xavier Ford, Grant Washington. And they also took a Purdue transfer tailback by the name of Jerron Thomas. He's more of a developmental type. Figure out if you actually have something there, and he can come in and give you scout team reps.
All right, let's talk quarterback to close this out. We all know Drake Lindsey is going to be back for the Gophers. He, you know, in Penn will be the starter barring injury. And then you've got no change, obviously, at quarterback coach, offensive coordinator. So I know the name Jackson Colick. He's moving on to UC Davis. I know nothing about Michael Merdinger.
Yeah.
Merdinger. Okay, sure.
He's actually a pretty funny story where I'm pretty sure Greg Harbaugh offered him. Well, he did. So Greg Harbaugh offered him out of high school. He went to
Liberty.
Well, he did go to let me explain the story here.
Okay.
He went to Cardinal Gibbons High School. It's a Fort Lauderdale area. Pretty good high school. Harbaugh goes and watches him throw as a high school kid, offers him. And I'm pretty sure the next guy he saw, a young man from Fayetteville, Arkansas, I think within the next couple of days, which was Drake Lindsey. Drake Lindsey ends up signing with Minnesota. Merdinger signs with North Carolina. Goes to North Carolina, red shirts, transfers out, coaching change. Goes to Liberty. Starts one game for them as a second-year guy. Hits the portal again. And now he gets to reunite with Greg Harbaugh 36 months after Harbaugh liked him throw. Now, they're looking for a QB2 type to push Max Schickenjanski, and that's what you're going to have in Merdinger.
Okay. I mean, it's going to be Drake's show to run, and it'll be curious to see how that all shakes out in terms of backing him up with those that they have instead now. So any parting thoughts? I mean, this was a lengthy episode. We talked a lot about the schedule. We talked about, you know, the changes in coaching, and then as well as all kind of the portal additions, and it started to evolve into like what's in the room in general. But yeah, any other parting thoughts, Ryan, before we split?
Oh, I mean, I know there's a lot of information to go through there. So if you got to go back and listen to this one a second time, trust me when I say I get it. But a lot of stuff that we had to cover. And now we get into the coaching staff is currently on the road. Things will slow down quite a bit here in February with a dead period. And then spring ball starts to kick back up in March. So the hope would be, Luke, and I know you've laid out this goal to me, and I'll try to manifest it here in the podcast, see if I can't get the powers of B to accommodate your request, which is what?
My request.
Who do you want to get on the podcast here in the off season?
Oh, I don't know. I've had a few people.
I think Luke wants to get most of the coaching staff onto this.
Oh, yes. I'm going to put in the request, but dude, I'm not asking for your help on that. I'm going to put that request in myself.
Well, they're going to see the podcast, and regardless if you mention my name or not, it's going to get brought back to me of, are you serious?
Hey, you know what? We did it for basketball, and let me tell you, people liked it.
I agree. Look, I would love to sit here and shoot the crap with them.
And the thing is, we don't have to talk about, like, we didn't talk, like, deep stuff. Like, give me your philosophical thoughts on gaps versus zone. Like, no. Like, we can talk about all sorts of stuff. Like, well, let's humanize the people. That's what we want to do. So,
I'm all here for it. So, we'll see if we can't get the overlords at B to accommodate us. Again, who are we but simple podcasters?
Simple podcasters. Okay. Thank you again for listening. I hope that this was a minor distraction in all that's happening in your lives, and that you found a way to enjoy the time you spent listening to us, whether that be a drive, a workout, maybe shoveling, because it's no longer lawn mowing season. But hey, if you're the one listening to this and you're lawn mowing, it's been a while, folks. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.